It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are back together in the studio today on this glorious Saturday morning in Northeast Florida. And we'll be sticking around here for the next hour. If you are a regular, thank you so much. And we appreciate it all the time. If you're new and just heard about the show, or if you forgot to turn your radio or something like that, try to stick around for the hour. We always promise one thing and, well, two things, actually. The first one is you'll learn something. And the second one is if you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, you will go right to the top of the board and we'll talk about what you want to talk about instead of all the exciting things we've got today. It's hard not to be in a good mood on a day like this. And I haven't just commuted in on the Autobahn. It looks like people are feeling pretty good.
It was crowded out there today.
Not only crowded, crowded at 80, 90 miles an hour, zooming around me on both sides. That's another story. Anyway, we are happy to be here. And it's also hard to be in a bad mood today because for the second week in a row, we posted some green numbers.
Yes, we did.
And you've been probably watching some rather red numbers happening prior to this, starting on about, what, the 4th of January? I think we peaked on the 3rd.
We did. We hit all-time highs on the 3rd, and it's been nothing but bad news ever since, until 2 weeks ago.
Yep. And I talked about this last week, too, when you weren't here. But for the last 2 weeks, I mentioned that a strange little phenomenon has occurred. Don't know if it's meaningful. But at the end of the big bad one in 07, 08, and 09, that market turned around on March 9th. And this year, the bottom so far was on March 9th. And I'm just wondering if history wants to repeat itself this year. And I hope so.
Yeah, that is
pretty, I've had enough.
That is pretty ironic, though. This week we saw, well, if you were listening to the prior show, Angela and Howard were talking about interest rates. And I'm going to talk a bit about interest rates, too, because, man, oh, man, are they shooting up. I mean,
it's a moving target.
It's really incredible right now how fast yields are moving. The 10-year Treasury yield continued its ascent this week. It began the week at 2.179, ended the week at just a hair under 2.5%. To put that in perspective,
a lot of move.
3 months ago, the yield was under 1.5%. 3 months. That's interest rates generally don't move that fast. That's pretty incredible.
If we're not careful, we'll be able to make money on a CD one of these first days.
Yeah, that's
not very much though.
I mean, that is the upside. So higher rates, getting paid higher rates is coming.
Unfortunately, the inflation rate chews it all up as fast as you can make it.
Well, that's that. Hopefully, with the increased interest rates, the inflation rate does come down too. And in fact, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell made it pretty clear this week that he's going to do whatever it takes to get inflation under control, and he put on the table a potential 50 basis point rate hike next month, or even multiple 50 point rate hikes in the coming months if inflation doesn't start to come down.
Fighting words.
Yeah, for sure. But the market seemed to not mind it, so that's the good news. I think the market may view inflation as the bigger fear than interest rate hikes.
Finally,
right now,
people have come to their senses on that one.
So the Fed is still behind the curve. We've been saying it for quite some time. They made a huge tactical blunder a couple years ago. They promised no rate hikes until 2023. We said at the time, that's why are they doing that? That's dumb. It doesn't make any sense. And then as things progressed, we saw it looked even worse in hindsight because you could see this inflationary environment building. 2023 was not a realistic time frame. There's no reason they should have said that. It was really a dumb move.
There was one big fat reason. He wanted to keep his job.
Yeah, I guess.
That's
but
no
still,
way to do it.
I think there are better ways to do that without putting that timeline in place. When you can't predict the future. Even a Fed chair who has tons of training and experience, they cannot predict the future.
You must have learned from Congress. They can predict with absolute accuracy the budget 10 years out.
But only 10 years, no further.
Only 10 years. The 11th year, that's all fuzzy.
Right. So despite all of that yield talk, the market had a pretty nice week. The Dow kind of lagged the other indexes, climbed 0.3%. The S&P gained 1.8%, and the NASDAQ added 2%. So for the year, all three indexes are now down just single digits, which is much better than a couple weeks ago.
Is.
And the NASDAQ is down 9.4%, the S&P down 4.7%, and the Dow just 4.1%. The month of March has been a pretty good one. The Dow is now up 2.9%, the NASDAQ up 3%, and the S&P up 3.9% in March alone. So not bad. Bonds have not fared as well during the month of March.
And they're not likely to.
No. And year to date, many bond funds are down more than stock funds. For example, AGG is down 6.7%, BND 6.8%, and LQD 9.6% down this year.
Those are all broad bond indices, so it's telling you what you need to know, but hopefully you knew it prior to January.
In March, all three funds are down more than 3.7%. So while those stock funds are up 2 to 3 to 4%, in March, the bond funds are going the other way, about the same amount, down 3 to 4%. LQD is actually down more than 4% in March alone. And other bond classes, though, have done a little bit better. TIP is down, but it's fallen 2.8% this year, and it has almost doubled the yield of the other funds at 5% right now because of inflation. So not saying that that's a great buy. They're pretty pricey, but it has performed much better than broad market
bonds. Spins off a little income and holds its value a lot better.
Bank loan funds have also fared a lot better. The one we use is down 1.4% year to date and down just 0.6% in March, and it has a yield of over 4.5%. So now, my point of all that is just that now is a very good time to be strategic with the bond portion of your portfolio, holding broad-based bond indexes into a rising interest rate market, probably not going to benefit you very much. The only thing worse would be long bond, like TLT. I think it's down, I want to say, close to 20% recently.
People couldn't understand how you could make 20% in a bond fund. Well, there's why, because you can also lose it.
That's right.
You know, when you hear somebody say, I'm going to safety, I'm moving to bonds, you can laugh in their face and you have my permission.
Another area I wanted to talk a little bit about, heard a lot about on the last show too, housing nationally continues to fall behind the demand curve, and it's really due to inventory issues caused by supply chain disruptions and lack of labor availability. The ETF XHB that tracks the industry is down almost 24% year to date, and home builders are still selling everything they can build. So why the disconnect? Home builders can't meet demand because they can't get materials or labor. This pushes out delivery times, meaning their margins are getting squeezed as their costs increase and their revenue forecasts come in below target. New home sales came in below target for February at 772,000 versus 810,000 expected. However, the average new home is spending just 10 weeks on the market, which is a record low. So weak sales numbers, definitely not due to demand. It's due to a lack of inventory.
Yeah, finished homes are in such short supply that the numbers are going down. You could look at the numbers and say, oh my God, it's a terrible time for home builders.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing could be further from
the truth. No, they're busy.
It's a terrible time for them, but not for that reason.
Right, other problems.
Yeah, you want to move into your house without a garage door? Some of them are doing that. They're building a little structure inside the frame of the garage so you can move in and at least use the house, because garage doors are just nowhere to be found.
So crazy.
I find very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
What a strange thing to be short of. Lots more to come after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question this week, brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We seem to have an endless amount of energy when it comes to picking on millennials. Let's face it, it's a target-rich environment.
It is. It's pretty easy.
So I got a millennial question today. What percent of American real estate wealth is in the hands of millennials? Good morning, Marshall.
I'll throw you out there something. How about 5%?
How about 5%? How about that being too low?
Okay.
Pretty good, huh? For you. I figured whoever guessed first would guess low, because we don't give them much credit, and they're actually starting to shape up a little bit.
Well, it's just that it's not credit. It's just that they're young and they haven't had that much time. And
that's
been,
true.
A lot of them have been renting up until the last few years.
Yeah, or not renting at all, just staying in the basement with mom.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Understood.
What's
my
happening?
Question for you, though. Before y'all came on, our real estate friends were complaining about the corporate home buying and how the challenge that that is creating. Are those what those limited partnerships are that we've seen advertised, or is that part of that?
I'm not sure which ones you're referring to. I know that I think the limited partnership thing, the ones I've seen anyway, have been for companies that are building apartment complexes or commercial buildings. I haven't seen it put together to specifically buy single family homes to rent out, but that would not surprise me if that were happening also. So I haven't seen any advertisements for them, though.
Yeah, I found those ads kind of scary.
You really
It's been a while since I was that interactive with the general real estate builder community. But like 5 years ago, I literally had a realtor friend who was given a spreadsheet to share with the builder and say, okay, if you can find the lots and he can build the house that accomplishes this, we'll buy it. And they were saying, we'll buy whatever you can produce that meets that spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
So they were building a rental portfolio to help them hold for whatever extended period they wanted to hold it and let appreciation come in. So it's not like this is a very new thing. It's just gotten a lot more publicity of late, and especially, you know, I really feel for some of the home buyers who are trying to find a house.
No, no kidding.
An ironic thing, the new basketball coach at the University of Florida made a comment of how he and his wife had put a week set aside for her to come to town, find a house, and evidently they got outbid on multiple houses. And so he's got to kind of follow up with their realtor for a while, hoping to have something to then share with his wife. The dynamics that this changes, and yet those people that are those real estate partnerships, trusts, whatever they're doing, they are going to benefit, just as old folks like Steve and I get to benefit from our house we've been in for a good while.
Absolutely true. Even at Adam's age now, they've been around for a while, and we were just talking about that last night, basically. And it's really changed. Pardon?
Adam's still in Neptune Beach, right?
Jack's Beach.
Jack's Beach, barely. He's kind of on the line. Yeah, and that real estate is really going crazy good down there for an owner.
I was doing comparables for a borrower, and I saw a house valued in Neptune by the Sea. Mm-hmm. For $1 million.
Yeah, that's common. I saw one just sell in there for about that much.
Yep.
I was with the company that developed that, and we were selling what I thought were very expensive houses at $250,000. You know? So, yep. Yeah, it has changed. It is still a beautiful place to live.
And
thank
everybody,
you, gentlemen, for keeping us all on page.
Well, we're always here to help. We appreciate your call. Take care of yourself. Bye, Marshall. He's a good guy. You all probably recognize him. By the way, if you ever start thinking seriously about a reverse mortgage, that's Marshall's specialty, and he can fill you in. They get such a bad rap because they got off to such a bad start years ago. Believe me, the 2022 product on a reverse mortgage is nothing like what you remember from even 10 years ago. And they're very helpful for some planning areas. With the equity in people's homes right now, as they get older, it might prove very, very interesting to check it out as a source of income if you're a little house rich and cash poor.
Especially with the inflation that we've been seeing. Mm-hmm. We know that your Social Security payment is not going to keep up with inflation, and your pension most likely won't keep up with inflation. Hopefully your stock portfolio will when we get through this period of volatility. But right. The Yeah, it could be a useful tool for the right people who need cash flow and don't have any other way to get it.
All right, back to the couple of things to wrap up in the market. The first-time unemployment claims this week fell down to 187,000, which is the lowest since, I believe, September of 1969.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So if you got laid off this week, A, I'd be surprised, and two, you're really a screw-up.
Yeah, the job market remains very robust despite all of the – if you turn on the news, they're painting this picture of the economy just falling apart. It's still – despite everything going on, the war in Ukraine, the inflation, everything else, the economy is actually running along at a pretty good clip right now, and it's just being overshadowed by other events. It's not nearly as poor as people would have you believe.
Exactly. I hear it all the time. Oh, we're already in a recession, or there's a recession coming, or worse yet, and it's just on and on and on, nonstop comments like that. Well, guess what happened to the consumer sentiment this week?
I didn't see that. What happened?
You know how the Bears have been in control for a long time.
I was going to talk a little bit about that. You're talking about market sentiment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's investor sentiment. It's a contrarian indicator. If you listen to the show, we like to talk about it frequently, so you're probably familiar with it. We'd been saying prior to last week's bounce that sentiment had hit just about as low as it had been since the Great Recession. And what do you know? A little market rebound really tends to turn things around, and that happened this week. Bullish sentiment jumped more than 10% from 22.5 to 32.8. That's the highest level we've seen in 2022. Bear sentiment dropped from almost 50% down to 35.4%. Because that's a contrarian indicator, those numbers might scare you. Oh, no, we're going the wrong way. But the levels that they're at right now are really close to their long-term averages. And when we've seen previous moves of this nature, it's generally been followed by about average market returns going forward out a year or more. So it's nothing to scare you. It hasn't shifted so much that it's at a point where bullish sentiment's high enough that it's signaling a market crash or anything like
that. No. The failure to account for human activity and opinions and all that, just basic behavior, means you're always going to be behind the curve if you're looking at the market or economics in general. But a lot of things are sort of self-correcting. The example we always love to use is oil prices. As we say it, the cure for high oil prices is high oil prices. The cure for low oil prices is low oil prices. Why? Because the consumer reacts differently. And if push comes to shove, they start bombarding the White House with emails and such saying, fix it, fix it. And that you're going to see that starting up a little bit now on the natural gas thing because we have pledged to help Europe. But when it comes to the market, all it took was a little second week in a row of rising markets, and all of a sudden we're feeling good about the market. Let's buy in. That speaks to one of the other precepts that we love to discuss, which is if you got out on the way down, when are you going to get back in? Well, according to what we just read, that seems to have happened right about now. What did you miss?
Just 8% on the NASDAQ last week.
two weeks, basically, from the March 8th close to yesterday's close. If you aren't back in yet, you have foregone 2,228 Dow points.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any reason to leave a couple thousand Dow points on the table.
No, it makes no sense.
Yeah, if we were in a full-fledged war, if the economy had actually crashed, if we were in a big old recession, any of that. In other words, if you could come up with a valid reason that the market was going down, then fine, you might want to do something about it. But there was no real valid reason why the market was going down at that pace. It got a little overheated in January. All through last year, it was such a good year. But it found, at least for now, it found what it wants to find for a bottom.
Let's talk about this more after the break, but I'll tell you why it's so hard to convince yourself to get back in after you go out, too.
It is hard, and it's something that's been studied ad nauseum by people like us and by behavioral scientists and market watchers and all that. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and then I want to tell you one thing after we get done with that. It finally happened. Helsinki froze over. More on the other side to explain that. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay some bills. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. What percentage of real estate wealth in this country is in the hands of those, I might call them underrated, millennials now? And we know that 5% is too low.
Two things to remember about millennials. One, they're young. Mm-hmm. Two, they are a huge generation. Yep. So whatever that number is today, it will grow exponentially in the next 20 years. But they're still young and still acquiring assets and moving their way up the career ladder. So you have to take all those things into consideration when you're thinking about this question.
That is true.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about why selling, when you sell into a declining market, the hardest thing to do is to pull the trigger and get back in. And it's all psychological mostly psychological. One thing
half of it is 90%.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. No, it's just the part of it is just you don't know where the bottom is. So timing getting out at the top and then timing getting in at the bottom, almost 100% impossible.
And they never ask me. I would tell them when it happened and where it happened and how much it went down. But I won't tell them for quite a while.
That's really useless because that's the whole problem. You just don't know.
Forensic accounting on your stock portfolio is really stupid.
I got probably five questions 3 weeks ago, should I start selling out some or all of my stock holdings now? And I said no every time, and thankfully no one did it. Good. Because 2 weeks ago was one
right
of the
there.
Best weeks. It might be the best week we'll see all year. And the reason that it's hard to get back in, let's say you did sell out 3 weeks ago, then you see a day like Monday or Tuesday of last week, and you think, oh, well, there's a bump, but obviously then it's going to drop on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't drop on Wednesday. And then you say to yourself, well, 3 days in a row, there's absolutely no way that it can go up again a fourth day.
Right.
And then it does. And then you just keep playing this game where you're waiting for it to drop back down to find an entry point, and that never happens. But then you get a week like you had this week, and you get two somewhat big down days in the middle mm-hmm. of three decent up days.
I told you.
Yeah, and then it's hard to convince yourself to buy because, oh, well, here we go again. We're gonna go down and crash again.
Yeah, that was a dead cat bounce.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And so you just keep playing this game with yourself where you can't find the perfect entry point. And the other problem is so much of the moves happen when the market is closed and off hours that by the time the market opens, you've already missed out on a few percentage points of the gain that you would have had you bought the night before, or the evening before, right before the market closed. Yep. So it's so easy to run the circular logic where you just never make a decision to get back in, and before you know it, you've missed out on 2,200 Dow points.
Yeah. And now what do you do? Wait to get them back for the next big dip?
Some people make that decision, or some people set an arbitrary date that they'll get back in the market. So I'm going to wait out 3 months. Well, who knows what's going to happen in that 3 months? You're more than likely going to end up hurting yourself worse by doing that than playing the when do I get back in game. So there's no good answer to it. I can almost guarantee you that you will hurt yourself, your long-term results, by playing the get in, get out game.
And if it makes you so uncomfortable that you can't convince yourself to just get right back in, at least dollar cost average back in.
Right.
So one-third a month for 3 months or something.
That's usually like that. The easiest answer that is also the best answer.
Mm-hmm. It's not the right answer, but it is if you have analysis paralysis, as they like to say in the business, I can't count the number of times we've had people come in and tell us they're afraid to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they want help is so that we'll do something. When the only thing that's intolerable is the status quo, do something. But if you can't, then you get help. And we'll look them in the eye and tell you, we'll go back in and I'll make you one promise and it'll work every time. The next day, something will go down.
For sure.
But we will have bought lots of things.
Inevitable.
That's the whole idea here. Diversify, diversify, diversify. All right, lines are open. I'll remind everybody, 904-222-8255. What percentage of real estate wealth is in the hands of millennials? All right, I mentioned before the break that a strange thing happened. Helsinki froze over. Tell you what I mean. Who knows the word taxonomy out there? It's actually a pretty simple explanation for a word that I read it and I see stuffed animals, knowing that it's not the same word, but you're just looking at it.
Yeah, it's not taxidermy.
Or I look at it and say, oh, it's the analysis of taxes or something like that. No, that's not right either. Taxonomy is a classification system. That's it. Pretty simple, huh? Well, the taxonomy in Europe is undergoing some changes right now. The European Commission, that body that, I won't go there, a bunch of liberals, you know that. Mm-hmm. The European Commission has labeled nuclear and natural gas energy as sustainable. Critics, and they abound, obviously, are referring to that as greenwashing, which is a word that...
Greenwashing. Does that mean portraying something as green when it isn't?
That's exactly what it means.
But it is green. I mean...
A lot greener than what we're doing now.
Yeah, way more so.
Yeah. So, of course, the commission has a grandiose goal by 2050 of becoming climate neutral. Now... what the heck does that mean? Somebody really, really believes, lots of people really, really believe that we can affect it with our carbon emissions and so on. So given that, you know, you go to war with the army you've got, this is the climate in Europe. But now with the problems in Ukraine and the shutting off desire, if not actual action, of the oil and gas from Russia and the suspension of the pipeline, they're finding out that they really don't have enough natural gas over there. What's that going to mean? You know, it's a lot colder there than it is in Florida. So they're hunting for whatever they can do. And Biden's over there now, and once he gets either of his feet out of his mouth and is able to tell him something, he's pledged to help. Well, we've got a whole bunch of... LNG, liquefying plants, that are ready to start up again because they've been paused. Now, at the other end, what do you have to do if you've got liquid natural gas going over there? You have to deliquefy it. Well, those plants aren't ready yet. That's a little problem. And that means for the Europeans who have shut down, Germany shut down all of its nuke plants, and they're shutting down every coal plant that they can come up with. So they have a real honest-to-goodness problem. Without natural gas and nukes, they are going under. Plain and simple. They're going to freeze to death. The jobs are going to be lost. The economy will go in the tank, the whole thing. So how do you do that when you are a professed greenie? Simple. You just reclassify things, and then you don't have to apologize. So they have decided that nuclear energy and natural gas are green. Pretty good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there's blowback, pushback. And one of the problems that they say is we can't store the nuclear waste. We don't have a place for it. But I submit that any area that has as many mountains as Europe does, start digging a hole in there and line it with whatever you need and let's get it in there. That's what we do. Nobody likes to talk about it, but don't put it on planes and trains and move it any further than you have to. Just get it up there. I do not consider that to be an insurmountable problem. Plus, I've read some things that are using spent rods from nuclear reactors and creating other things from them. So hopefully we're going to solve that problem just out of necessity. Now, France is building umpty-foo new nuke plants right now. So, of course, they're at odds with Germany that doesn't want any nuke plants.
Well, they're decommissioning all
They're decommissioning
yeah.
by the end of this year. So we now are watching a war of semantics, and I personally could not be happier. Green energy, folks. That's all it's about. All right, we have to take one more break, and we'll come back and discuss a bunch more topics. There's a very exciting vote that's supposed to take place this week in the House. Not exciting to everybody, but it is to me, so I get to tell you about it right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question still there. What percentage of real estate, American real estate wealth, is in the hands of our millennials? We know that 5% is too low. All right, if you were born after June 30th, 1949, and have not taken a required minimum distribution, and you know who you are out there, I know several of you, guess what? Secure 2.0 is scheduled to go into a vote this week in the House. That would increase the required minimum age from its current 72 to 73, and then eventually up to 75. So don't take them yet, you 1950s babies. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Great show as always.
Oh, thanks so much.
So I have a question. It's kind of topic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's about I can't think of it right now. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm getting back $1,000.
Refund?
Refund from the state of Georgia.
Oh.
And this is, you know, I don't know if the term is double taxation. Obviously, I paid too much taxes to the state of Georgia.
Right.
And now they're going to give me $1,000 back, and then next year I have to claim that as income.
That's correct, because you deducted it when at the time.
Right. So it's not double taxation, it's retaxation.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It certainly seems like I'm losing on this deal. I don't know. I know a lot of people would be happy. They're getting $1,000 back, and I look at it as that's another $280 I'm going to lose next year.
Never, ever bet against the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And I'm curious as to what I could do. Do I claim more than I'm claiming? Am I allowed to claim more than my wife and myself? Can I claim three or four or something?
Yes.
To reduce how much is taken out?
Yes, there is a maximum that you can do. You can also, I don't know, now, this rule might be state of Georgia, so I can't speak to that, but at least at some levels, there is a form you can fill out to say withhold a little bit less or a little bit more,
yeah.
Or you can direct it.
You can actually put in a number sometimes.
Right, you can do it numerically,
yeah.
At the federal level anyway. So
okay.
I would look at the state of Georgia rule and see if you can equalize that somehow. Our goal always is a refund of zero and a payment of zero.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be that precise, but you can be pretty good if you've been living about the same, paying about the same taxes over and over. So I would check that out, and I'm pretty sure there's a way you can do it.
Yeah, the only way you can win in that scenario is if your marginal tax rate this year is lower than it was in the year that you originally paid that money in. So you might get a slight break that way, but that would require a change in your circumstances, and I don't know if that's the case here.
Yeah, are you living on a relatively stable income?
Yes, I have a pension and I work a part-time job.
Perfect.
Also, so it's
you should be able to adapt
every year. Yes.
Yeah, you can probably alter the withholding one way or the other from your part-time job once you figure out what to do about it.
Yeah, or
okay,
or you could put that $1,000 into an IRA and not pay taxes
could
on
do,
it.
Could do, yeah. Yeah, are you contributing to an IRA?
Yes, I am. A Roth.
Oh, see, if you did a traditional,
if you did a trad, yeah.
That would make it, you would not, it would be as if you never earned that money or got that money back from the state of Georgia.
And that's an above-the-line deduction, too. Georgia doesn't tax part of your retirement income. At least it didn't last time I had a friend who lived up there. Mm-hmm. And if you save that at the federal level, I bet you'd save it at the state level, too. But that's a really good idea. Instead of doing your max out on the Roth, do 1,000 to the traditional and the rest of it to the Roth, which you can do just so you don't exceed the 6,000 or 7,000 if you're 50 or above. It's actually a very good suggestion.
I'm very much on the above side.
Okay. So,
I hear you.
So, yeah, just make sure your combined contributions don't exceed the $7,000 for the year, but that will definitely keep that money from being taxed again.
It will. I like that idea.
Well, great. Yeah. Great. I always learn something from you guys, I tell you.
We promise.
You know, you've been around this long. You think you know pretty much everything there is to know, and every week I'm amazed at what I learned.
We have a little advantage on that because we get to discuss personal financial situations with all kinds of people in the course of a year.
All day, every day.
Yeah, so we hear lots of different stories and try to come up with some creative ideas that often come from someone else.
Okay.
It's a great part of this job.
Well, thank you so much for the information. And
no problem. You want to take a shot at our trivia?
Yeah, I'm going to say... in honor of the greatest baseball player who ever lived, Willie Mays, I'm going to go with 24%.
All right. That I don't disagree with you on your Willie Mays comment, but it's too high.
Okay.
So we've got a range between 5 and 24 if anyone else wants to call.
We appreciate it.
We got some kind of bracket.
Yep, we do.
All right, guys.
All right, take care. Thanks for
the call. Thanks,
Ron. That was a very good idea.
Yeah, it was a good question. I hate getting taxed on things I don't want to get taxed on, and
really
get those unexpected surprises. It's nice to have a way to mitigate
and
that.
And as long as you have earned income to cover it, you can do it.
Yep.
And it's deductible, as I say, above the line, so it doesn't affect your AGI or your taxable income, except in a positive way.
That is correct. Did you want to talk more about Secure 2.0?
There's not really a whole bunch more to say. The vote is scheduled for Tuesday, and it might shift into Wednesday or Thursday. But it's one of the rare pieces of legislation, as was its daddy, Secure 1.0, mm-hmm. that has overwhelming support. Over 400 members of the House voted for the 1.0, and the committee that was going through 2.0 came out, I believe, unanimously.
Okay.
And if this thing goes, it will have no trouble making it into law this year. And then those of us who are turning 72, we'll get another year of dispensation.
Nice.
And, you know, not everybody does it. 75, 80% of people need their required minimums anyway.
Or pull out more than what they're supposed to.
Exactly. But for the rest of us, hallelujah. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today?
Great. You?
Well, I thought I would. I'm doing all right.
Good.
Get in more than one slam here before the 1100 hour on your trivia question.
Sure,
go for it.
Well, 11%.
Ooh, so close, but a little low. Sorry, it's lower than my bracket.
All right, I'll get off the line here so somebody else can get on before sign off.
We appreciate the call. Bye. I can see why people are guessing these things, but the actual number, to me, I've been trying to be kind to millennials lately, and partly because of Megan.
Yeah.
She's a good millennial.
That is true. They do exist.
They do.
Speaking of, well, not necessarily millennials, but younger generations, did you see what Governor DeSantis signed this week? It is actually focused on the younger generation. He signed a bill to require financial literacy class for high school graduation. It would be required for all kids going through public schools in Florida to take a financial literacy class, something that we have been huge, huge supporters of for a long time. I can't believe it's actually happening. I'm very pleased that it's just in time for my oldest to enroll in high school. So hopefully he'll have to take one, even though his dad has hopefully taught him a few things here and there.
Yeah, he never listened to you.
That's true. Someone else might have more luck. But yeah, I thought that was a really great idea. We sorely need it. It is lacking in our education system, and people graduate high school with just no clue how to manage their money. It's they're woefully unprepared.
And with the gazillions of dollars that are being transitioned from the baby boomers down to the next generation and beyond that, a lot of people are going to be exposed to a lot of money.
Oh,
they
yeah.
won't have a clue what to do with it.
Definitely.
In fact, if you took the baby boomer generation and if they put the same amount of money in the S&P 500 total return index every year from 20 to 65, the gain would be 2,013%.
Okay, total gain.
2,000%. Now, that tells you something. Invest often, invest early, keep it up, and that's only till you're 65. If you're still doing it, then you'll do even better. 13, I would have taken 12 or 14, sorry, Leroy, 13% of real estate wealth is now in the hands of the millennials. I congratulate them, one and all. They are not really shirking the way so many people think they are. They're actually growing up and they're doing a lot of the right things.
Well, some of them are 40 now, so.
That's true, too.
There is that.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.